When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Coming up on DTNS, G4 is apparently back, India is making more iPhones, and Patrick Norton lets us know how bad the Intel news is. This is the Daily Tech News for Friday, July 24th, 2020 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Redwood, I'm Sarah Lane.
Drawing the top tech stories from Cleveland, Ohio, I'm Len Peralta.
I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
And joining us, as I mentioned, host of AVXL, Patrick Norton. How's it going, Patrick? Patrick?
Oh.
Patrick, you've muted yourself on Skype.
That's a first.
Or maybe Skype didn't want you. They didn't want the truth to come out. How's it going,
yeah,
man?
Outside of this whole Blue Jays, Buffalo, Bison hat thing, I'm golden.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, we were just talking about a show called Alone on the History Channel. And you need to get the dramatic retelling from Len Peralta by becoming a member at patreon.com/DTNS and getting Good Day Internet. Let's start here with a few tech things you should know. Not that one, this one.
Two former Twitter employees tell Reuters that more than 1,000 employees of Twitter and contractors had access to internal tools as of early 2020 and could change user account settings and hand control to others, including contractors like Cognizant that work with Twitter. Twitter says it's seeking a new head of security, working to better secure its systems and train employees on resisting tricks from outsiders in the future.
The Verge's sources say the Monday hearing of the U.S. House Judiciary Committee, the assembling of the Avengers, Mark Zuckerberg, Sundar Pichai, Jeff Bezos, and Tim Cook, will be postponed. It's like it's a Hollywood movie. A private memorial and public viewing of U.S. Representative and civil rights leader John Lewis is scheduled for Monday. And that would start just after this hearing was originally scheduled. So people are like, you're probably not going to want to go straight from one end to the other. This hearing, whenever it happens, is supposed to mark the end of an investigation by the U.S. Congress into allegations of anti-competitive behavior by these companies.
An update to the Samsung Galaxy Buds companion app points to an official Galaxy Buds Live name and support for active noise cancellation, as well as a how to wear the earbuds with apparent touch controls. Wind Future reports that the price will be $169 with 4.5 hours of estimated battery life, 3 mics, and 12 nanometer drivers. Hmm.
The National Basketball Association, the NBA, is using Microsoft Teams' new Together mode to create a virtual experience for fans during live games, using AI to segment your face and your shoulder and recreate the appearance of being in the venue. Fans will be able to watch a live feed of the game within Teams, select fans anyway, and see other fans at the same time, and the players will hear them cheer, and it sounds kind of fun, actually.
An outage that began Thursday affected Garmin's website. We talked about it a little bit on the show yesterday. Call centers were affected as well. Data syncing services, aviation databases, and production lines in Asia. Caitlin Simponyu at ZDNet reports that it may have been caused by the Wasted Locker ransomware. While services are still out, users can't sync their fitness data from devices. Pilots also, notably, unable to do FAA-required updates to flight databases on their navigation devices.
And as I've been doing some vaccine updates as news becomes available, two of the SARS-CoV-2 vaccines that are in phase three trials, remember phase three is the last step before you can actually use it on the public in general, have received updates. Sinovac's vaccine, which uses an inactivated virus, has received approval to conduct part of its phase three trial with 9,000 people in Brazil, so expanding that phase three trial. And a vaccine from China National Biotech and Sinopharm have started phase three trials in Saudi Arabia. All right, let's talk a little more about that weird G4 news.
Oh, let's. And it was weird. On Friday, the Twitter accounts of G4 TV, Attack of the Show, and also X-Play all posted the same video of what looks like an abandoned studio. The camera kind of zooms among wooden crates, lands on a screen playing Pong. Then the screen is taken over by the words incoming transmission and is blurred and then lands on a G4 logo and then fade to the number 2021 and the words, we never stopped playing, which is supposed to indicate that G4 is coming back. The G4TV.com website shows a playable Pong game, which is that harkens back to a, you know, it's sort of like a ha-ha thing from the past. G4 shut down on November of 2014. Adam Sessler, Morgan Webb, and Olivia Munn all responded to the tweet with apparent surprise. As did I. Yeah. Not that, you know, we... The apparent surprise, I think is... It depends on who's being surprised. I truly was surprised. I don't know anything about this. You know, anybody who's been, you know, calling me at 6:30 in the morning, trying to ask me about this kind of thing. I don't know anything about this. I truly don't. But it does indicate that some people do.
Yeah. And if people don't know, Sarah used to co-host Attack of the Show back in the day and also used to work on Attack of the Show before it was changed to Attack of the Show when it was the Screensavers, which Patrick Norton, you also used to co-host. So, you know, correct. There's some history in the room. I used to run the website over there at techtv.com before it became G4. So we all have like a passing interest in this. But yeah, I don't know anything in particular about this either. Although I am very close to a source at NBC Universal when I mentioned this, she's like, "Oh yeah, I heard about that last week." So, you know.
I actually, and you know, I won't call out anybody by name, but I pinged some people this morning and I was like, "What is this? Why are all these people like pinging me on Twitter about this?" And they were like, "Yeah, I know about it, but I'm under NDA." So,
yeah.
I was like, all right, cool. Thanks. I mean, way to leave me out of everything as usual.
The best part is when we told Patrick this and Patrick, what was your reaction?
Who? Didn't they close a long time ago? Yeah, no, this makes no sense to me, but they own the brand. And the URL, I guess.
It makes perfect sense to me. Like, video gaming is hot right now. Yeah. I'm sure somebody independent of this at NBC could have been thinking, like, you know, we should probably start a channel around video games. That would be really hot. And somebody said, you know, we used to have one. And they're like, let's just revive the brand. We already got all the IP. So I totally get it.
G4.TV still redirects to Esquire.
Wait, G4.TV does? Because G4TV.com has the Pong thing on it now. You're right. Yeah. G4.TV goes to Esquire.com. Because if people don't know, G4TV was originally going to become the Esquire channel, and then they ditched that plan at one point.
Yeah. Well, it was for some time, but yeah.
Well, there you go. Yeah. TechCrunch's sources say Foxconn has begun building the iPhone 11 at its Chennai, India plant, though production yields are limited. India's Minister of Commerce and Industry also tweeted that Apple had begun assembling the iPhone 11 in India, so it seems like it's the case. Economic Times reports that Wistron also may begin making the new iPhone SE at its plant near Bengaluru as well. They used to make the old iPhone SE, and so it would make sense for them to make the new one. Wistron began producing older models of iPhones back in 2017. It currently makes the iPhone XR there. In both cases, though, what's significant is this would be the first time that current iPhone models would be made in India. Indian factories have been putting out the less expensive older models up until now. The first big advantage in doing this is Apple could then sell its flagship phones without having to charge a 22% import duty, which India puts on anything that isn't manufactured in the country. Xiaomi does this, saying nearly every phone it sells in India is assembled inside the country. So that alone would be enough for Apple to want this to happen. Also, developing India as a manufacturing option hedges against the uncertainty caused by the trade and political conflicts between China and the United States. So I don't find this news surprising, but it's notable that Apple's manufacturing base, as we have suspected, is beginning to widen.
Well, I mean, this started a long time ago in Foxconn. You know, as soon as the trade embargo started getting serious, Foxconn started making noises about expanding into India. So, you know, this isn't real surprising. I think part of me is real curious what limited production yields actually means once it's translated out of PR speak.
What it means right now is they're not making a lot of them yet, but it doesn't mean they won't tool up and start making a lot of them eventually. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess what I mean is, like, are they saying that because I hear production yields, and of course I have Intel on the brain right now because of something later, but you know, when yields are low, it means things are broken.
Right.
Or as you pointed out, maybe they're just slowly ramping things up.
That's how I took it, but you're right. Usually yield means like we just aren't able to get enough of them to work. I doubt that's what's going on here. It's probably just like, we don't have, because it's more expensive, we don't have as much demand inside India for the iPhone 11, so we don't have to make as many of them right away.
According to internal documents seen by Android Police, as of August 4th, T-Mobile will require new devices activated on its network to support voice over LTE. Existing 3G voice devices will now continue to work until January of 2021, and T-Mobile confirmed that new devices on its network will require voice over LTE support, but didn't offer the timeline. T-Mobile told The Verge that it has not offered non-voice over LTV devices for years, and the overwhelming majority of devices on its network support voice over LTE. AT&T will shut down its 3G calling service in 2023, and Verizon is shutting down 3G service at the end of this year.
Yeah, everybody's making a bigger deal about this than I think they would have because of that AT&T email that we talked about previously this week, where they kind of tried to scare people into upgrading their phone 2 years before they're ending the 3G calling service. What T-Mobile's trying to say is, look, we barely have anybody on the network who uses a voice over LTE phone or non-VoLTE phone. And the only ones that do are people who bring their own phone. So we're just letting them know, like, hey, if you bring your own phone, you better bring a newer phone, because if you're bringing a three-year-old phone, it's not going to activate. And anybody who's still on the network in January whose phone is several years old probably ought to upgrade too, but they're not sending out a scary email about it, at least not yet. Two security firms, Synactive and Grim, have found that the Android version of the DJI Go 4 app, that's the app you use with the quadcopters from DJI, has some suspicious behaviors, or at least these two researchers think so. The researchers say the app can download code outside of the Google Play Store, so not an app update through the Google Play Store, but it can secretly download its own code and install, theoretically, anything it wants, any application it wants. In fact, it uses the Weibo framework to do this, and Weibo allows for you to download and install apps within Weibo because it's a super app, it's a platform. The researchers also found a function that they say could restart the app when the user closes it so that you wouldn't notice that it didn't stay closed, and then it would run in the background making network requests. All right, so those aren't great things. DJI says, yes, we have an app update function like that. We have to have that to guard against users hacking geofencing restrictions. The FAA in the United States requires restrictions on the app to say you can't fly into these particular areas, you can't go above this altitude. And if people try to hack the app to get around that, this function would automatically replace any code that a hacker would put in to put the geofencing back. That's what DJI is saying it's there for. DJI also says it can't replicate the restart function that the researchers are talking about. They're like, we don't see that happening. DJI also says its functions were never exploited for malicious reasons. There's no evidence of that. The researchers say, yeah, no, we didn't see evidence of malicious use. We're just saying it could happen. DJI Go 4 for Android does, however, require access to your contacts, your microphone, your camera, your location, your storage, and the ability to change your network connectivity. So if it were to do something malicious, it would also have access to all that information too, which is unsettling. Google said it's going to look into all this. It's going to investigate these claims and get back to everybody.
Patrick, are you a drone user, and do these findings surprise or scare you?
No, you know, we use smaller drones, like the, you know, we have literally a couple of boxes of, little simple drones. We've got one DJI. I think this is that thin line between, I think this is malicious, we think this is, you know, safety. It's, you know, I'm torn between my usual level of paranoia involving anything. And sometimes, you know, an unexploited mistake is not something to freak out about. I'm kind of curious to see, you know, now that it's talked about, what people will be looking forward in the future. You know,
I think one thing that made me feel a little better about this is the researchers also found that the previous version of DJI Go 4 was sending telemetry data to a web advertiser, yeah. And that before this research was published, DJI went in and got rid of that, which is that's a typical app move these days. Is an app company thought it was okay to be sending all this data to an ad company, and that's not popular anymore, so the company goes in and rips it out. DJI did that all on its own. I think that shows that they're not, you know, the princes and saints of the universe here, but they're in, right, at least operating an industry norm, which is like, oh, that's not cool anymore. Okay, we'll stop doing that.
It's not, oh, you noticed that? We're so sorry.
Yeah.
We'll clear that out.
It doesn't necessarily mean that they were like, had an evil plan, but yeah, you know, the Chinese company right now is going to get extra scrutiny. That's understandable.
Well, speaking of collecting information, the information sources say that Google has an internal program called Android Lockbox that collects data on how non-Google apps are used on Android. The sources also say that Google uses this information to improve Google's own apps. So when people agree to share information while setting up Android, the program collects how often apps are opened and how long they're in use. So Google said in a statement that it uses the Android app data API, usage data API, to access, quote, basic data about app usage, such as how often apps are opened, to analyze and improve services, end quote. Google also cited the adaptive battery feature and Play Store app discovery feature as ways it has used the data.
I think the idea here is to have a gotcha on Google similar to what people have accused Amazon of, which the accusation with Amazon is that they look at what's selling with all the third-party marketers on the Amazon platform, then create a product based on that that drives those creators out of business, right? So a cool pattern on a shirt is going crazy, and then Amazon makes their own pattern and puts that up in the search results, and that's anti-competitive behavior. That's the allegation. I think they're trying to say the same thing here, is that Google looks at what app behavior is on the Android platform and then would use that to make apps that drive the other apps out. I feel like that's a less compelling thing on Google, where, yeah, they do bundle their apps in, but you also do not have to use them, unlike iOS. You can basically change to almost any other app on Android.
Right.
So without requiring me to use your app, I guess you could still say, oh, well, we'll make our apps better than the other ones in the App Store. But also, it feels legitimate that you would just use the data in the API to improve your operating system. But this is the problem when you run apps on your operating system and the operating system is it casts doubt. And people go, well, wait a minute. Are you doing this just for the operating system? Or are you doing this to you know, be better at competing with the other apps on your own platform?
I almost feel like this could also be a security issue where, you know, you could just observe, you know, is there a large group of behavior? Is something odd going on? Did all of a sudden a whole bunch of people in a region download an application that nobody had ever heard of before is a legitimate application? I mean, there's it doesn't sound particularly nefarious to me, but I'm also not competing against, you know, Google in the app space. So.
If I was an app, I would not like the idea of this. Right. If I was making an app. If I was an app, I wouldn't be a human, so I probably wouldn't have any feelings. If you want to get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, be sure to subscribe to DailyTechHeadlines.com.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. From a local business to a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest-cost model in the market, perfectly designed for high-volume, high-speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Tell you who's got some feelings right now, people at Intel. Let's be clear, Intel's earnings were good. Its processor arm saw revenue rise 7% because laptops work from home. People were buying a lot of those. Data center and memory solutions helped drive an overall 20% year-over-year increase in revenue for Intel. Also, good news on the horizon, the 11th Gen Tiger Lake and Z graphics cards are coming to laptops later this year. They're highly anticipated. The company's first 10-nanometer desktop CPUs, 12th Gen Alder Lake, also coming by the end of this year. That's the good news. However, during the earnings report, Intel announced it is delaying its 7-nanometer CPUs for personal computers 6 months, which would see the chips arrive sometime in 2022. Intel CEO Bob Swan said the company had identified what he called a defect mode in the 7-nanometer process. Meanwhile, keep in mind, AMD has had its 7-nanometer Ryzen 4000 chips on sale for a few months now. AWS makes its own 7-nanometer Graviton chip. The iPhone 11 uses a 7-nanometer process-made CPU made by TSMC. In fact, TSMC is readying its 5-nanometer process. So Intel is definitely behind, and announcing a delay doesn't make people happy. Also, the announcement was reminiscent of then-Intel CEO Brian Krzanich saying in 2015 that the 10-nanometer process was running behind schedule and would be delayed 6 to 9 months. That's 6 month figure again. And as you heard, some of those 10-nanometer products are just now coming out. Current CEO Bob Swan also made a remark that if 10-nanometer delays continue, Intel might outsource manufacturing. Here's his quote. We're going to be pretty pragmatic about if and when we should be making stuff inside or making outside and making sure that we have optionality to build internally. Mix and match inside and outside, or go outside in its entirety if we need to. That'd be a big deal for Intel. They don't do that. Intel 7-nanometer Ponte Vecchio graphics chip, which is meant for data centers and meant to bring Intel into competition with NVIDIA in data centers, was identified as a chip that they might decide to have made by outside chip factories. So the big thing here, Patrick, that has people concerned is the delay, right?
Right. Let's sort of break this down. You mentioned the 10-nanometer announcement from several years ago. The desktop CPUs, the first 10-nanometer desktop CPUs, Alder Lake, are actually not going to come to the second half of 2021, not this year. To put that into perspective, they were talking about 10-nanometer several years ago, and it's gotten delayed and delayed and delayed and delayed. All the Intel desktop processors are still sitting at 14-nanometer.
Did he say 6 months? He meant 6 years.
Six decades. When you look at processors, you come up with a design, and the process usually goes through a die shrink. When they change to a more efficient process, they shrink the size of everything. That reduces the voltage consumed. It gives you kind of a de facto reduction in the power consumed and a performance boost, and there's cooling. And that's what Intel's sort of TikTok thing was like for years, where they, the new processor design, a die shrink, a new processor design, a die shrink, and they would kind of get two layers of fun out of every design. That gave them some breathing room. And Intel was, for approximately forever, the most advanced in terms of shrinking the process, go through die shrinks and updating the process. And the wheels have just kind of completely fallen off that in the last 3 or 4 years. And that has allowed, companies that are kind of dedicated to manufacturing other people's designs to move to a lower process. Now, you could argue that, I want to say, like, TSMC's 7-nanometer is kind of like Intel's 10-nanometer, but the truth is Intel's, still struggling with 10-nanometer, and the end result is, things like when AMD was launching a processor last year and they decided to see how many times they could say 7 or put 7 in the artwork and in, the presentation and the speeches and the marketing, because they were just driving a fork into Intel's rib cage, because Intel wasn't even on 10-nanometer and they're at 7 and we're at 7 and we're at 7. We mentioned 7. We're going to launch this on 7. And it just went on and on. It's brutal. So a lot of things going on at the high end, depending on who you ask in terms of market share, sort of the high end desktop. There's been huge gains by AMD. AMD has had, 10 consecutive quarters of gains against Intel in the overall PC market. They've just released a huge round of processors that are going to be just for OEMs. So they're losing market share. It's a lot of money. and they've gone from being, for years and years and years, if you bought an AMD, it's because you were an AMD loyalist or because you were looking for a particular rock bottom processor. But in the last couple of years, AMD, they've done phenomenal work. The performance is way up. We could argue about individual, single core performance, but the reality is AMD is doing some incredible stuff with their architectures, and they are really in a position, especially with mobile, to start digging away at Intel's core business. Because client computing is like, I still want to say at least still 30% of their, or almost 30, 40, 50% of their business. It's a lot of money.
Yeah.
They have a huge amount in the data center group and other stuff, but Intel's got a real problem. And for, Intel's leadership to come out and say, it might be time for us to move to someone else, that's either some kind of a really vicious challenge to the engineers at Intel to fix this problem, or it's just them, acknowledging that they, after, all of the time they were leading on this, they have sort of lost their way and they are going to move to other options moving forward, which, is interesting. It's a big change for Intel. And in terms of Intel's culture, it's an incredible change.
Well, if you look at the history of Intel, it's lately been a history of missing opportunities and relying on its x86 instruction set chips to carry the weight. And that's the bad news here, is AMD and others are coming for that in various ways. And if that's all you've got, that's not enough to carry you forward. Fact of the matter is, it's not all they've got. They've got data center. And in fact, that's where most of their growth came from. And they could retreat into that. But that's, again, like giving up one more market. I think it would make sense for them to say, well, look, desktop CPUs, not a growth market. We could abandon that and go into other designs. And maybe that's what's leading Bob Swan to say, maybe it's a little of both. Maybe it's both a challenge to the engineers, but also a way forward to say, look, engineers, if you can make 7-nanometer work and get us back on track, great, we'll stay there. But if you can't, it's time for an IBM-like pivot where we stop making typewriters and start making mainframes. We stop building chips and we go to designing them and designing controllers for Thunderbolt and data center stuff and become more of an enterprise-level company and less of a supplier for personal computers.
Right. You know, and there's no doubt that, that Intel is still making huge amounts of money, period.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think it's been kind of crazy. I mean, one, there's this huge reaction from Wall Street, who punished in no uncertain terms. Wall Street just punished Intel's stock price. AMD is now worth more per share, but the market value is so much huger by Intel. But the other thing is, you touched on it before, is they missed some opportunities. And, you know, ARM processors and cell phones have become the primary primary computer for the vast majority of people on the planet. You know, they're never going to have a laptop, they're never going to have a desktop, or it will be a long time before they have a laptop or a desktop. So the computer is where they interact with the internet and each other and the web and games. And, you know, that was a huge opportunity that just kind of slid right by Intel. And by the time Intel realized that, that, you know, AMD powered devices primarily coming from, or primarily running Android, we're going to kind of take over the universe. You know, they were like, okay, we're going to do mobile. And they did this huge thing to try to do mobile and it didn't really work. And then this huge thing to try to do Internet of Things and it didn't really work. So they're frustrated because in terms of volume, AMD's kind of taken over computing. And they're, you know, AMD's also made huge inroads in the data centers. So they have to be a little uptight about looking at that, especially with, I think you guys talked about it yesterday, you know, with NVIDIA thinking about buying AMD from SoftBank. That would be
buying ARM from SoftBank.
Sorry, ARM. Thank you.
I've made that mistake many times.
I have AMD on the brain. But, you know, if NVIDIA buys ARM from SoftBank, I think at that point it becomes a real vicious NVIDIA versus Intel battle for data centers and AI and all sorts of stuff moving forward.
So what you're saying is, you know, indicating that either you get back on track or becoming a designer rather than a maker of chips is in a sense Intel's swan song.
Yes? Question mark.
Well, because Bob Swan is saying it, so the definition, there was, it really is.
It just slid right by me. I apologize. It's a challenge, and it's a huge, it's just a huge cultural shift at Intel. The idea that Intel would be manufacturing their processors. That's titanic.
Just throwing that out is that's meaningful, even if they never do it. Just saying that on an earnings call, that's serious stuff. You don't just say that by accident. That's not a throwaway.
I mean, the other thing that struck me is because I had cut and pasted this and sent it to a friend of mine is, you know, the quote from Bob Swan, you know, we've root caused the issue. We believe there are no fundamental roadblocks. Okay, that's okay. Yeah. And then the next sentence, I think, was, quote, but we've also invested in contingency plans to hedge against further schedule uncertainty. We've mitigated the impact of the process delay on our product schedule by leveraging improvements in design methodology, such as die disaggregation and advanced packaging. And it's like, that's a lot of, you know, jargon. and that's a lot of non-financial jargon in an earnings, you know, report. Like, that's, you know, contingency plan. That's a huge statement. And I think, honestly, what you're telling, if he's talking about moving over to another manufacturer, that's a huge contingency fan. They also have a contingency plan. They also have enough money where they could flat out pay any of a number of manufacturers a staggering amount of money to kind of set up manufacturing for their use. And I wouldn't, you know, that may be a much smarter utilization of resources for
Intel.
That's
a good point. Yeah.
Well, if you have thoughts on this, you can always join the conversation in our Discord, which you can join by linking to a Patreon account at patreon.com/DTNS. We also want to take a moment to shout out our patrons at our Master and Grandmaster levels, including Scott Hepburn, Dan Colbeck, and Erwin Sturr.
Len Peralta has been busy drawing today. What have you drawn from today's show, Len?
Well, you know, I know Intel's problems aren't necessarily pandemic focused, but I, you know, for this, I sort of did that. This is called Chip Insecurity, this piece. Mm. And it's, you know, it's, you've heard of food insecurity. It's the same sort of thing. But, you know, when it deals with tech stuff, it's a little bit different. You have a gentleman saying it's, Intel's chips are delayed till at least 2022. And the dudes who are eating this thing called Chippos is saying, 2022, how will they get any work done without these sweet, delicious chips? So, yeah.
Chippos.
I love Chippos. Exactly. This is, if you're interested in taking a look at this, this is at my Patreon right now, patreon.com/Len. Or if you want to purchase it, you can go to lenperaltastore.com.
Excellent. Also, thanks to Patrick Norton for being with us today. Patrick, I know you're on the move. You're doing lots of stuff. Let folks know where they can keep up with your work.
You know, just recorded another episode of AVXL with Robert Herrin yesterday, and hopefully there will be a our first episode of This Week in Computer Hardware. Sebastian Peake and I are recording one on Monday.
Oh, cool.
And hopefully that'll be back online next week.
Very cool.
Thank you, everybody.
I don't do any more.
Thank you, everybody who supports our show, patreon.com/DTNS. It's the best way to support DTNS. Also, another way is to buy some stuff in our store. We got hoodies. We got coffee mugs. We got stickers. We have masks. If you need any of that stuff with DTNS logo on it, go check it out. Support the show at dailytechnewsshow.com/store.
And if you have feedback, our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. We're live Monday through Friday. If you haven't joined us live, please do. 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 20:30 UTC. And you can find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live.
This Week in Computer Hardware is back. And on Monday, Andy Anatko is here. It feels like old times. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
You have enjoyed this program.
Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. From a local business to a global corporation,
partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful you'll make every move matter.
Visit bankofamerica.com/banking for business to learn more.
What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.